Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. As many of you know, I have been sending this around to let everyone know we have someone that is going to be running, that is running for the presidential campaign. What I'd like to say is there are so many people in this world that would love to do something that they haven't done before, something that they're knowledgeable of doing, and yet they're too afraid to come out and actually do it. Now, if a lot of you watch America's Got Talent and shows like that, you see a lot of people going on the show that they're going on to let everyone know, follow your dreams. If you feel that you are knowledgeable of things, if you feel that you can help society to improve it and not divide it, then you want to look for these kind of people who are really ready to go. Our guest today is going to be or is running for the presidential campaign. He's very unique and he has much to say because he can relate to the people he is going to be representing should he be elected president. So joining us today is Andy Williams Jr. and he's going to be speaking on issues pertaining to our broken political system that stands in the way of solutions. Politicians who stopped serving the people years ago. Andy is a rabbi, a modern-day abolitionist, an advocate for the people. Born in Illinois, he dropped out of high school, eventually took up residence at Illinois DOC, and ultimately was determined to improve himself. He attended college, obtained his degree, and has helped people across the nation with legal issues, housing, criminal, traffic citation, judicial, prosecutional misconduct, IRS issues, and much more. On July 3rd, of 2023, he announced his campaign to run for the presidency of the United States of America and is running on the new Democratic Republican Party ticket with a message of unity, representing the rights of the people and restoring America. His platform is to abolish all forms of slavery in the form of unfair taxation, mass incarceration, and to prevent government from infringing upon the rights of we, the people. All are welcome to join in as we listen to Andy. His websites can be found at www.hoodcandidate.com or www.andywilliamsjr.com. So, Andy, are you on with us?
I'm on.
I want to thank you for coming on. I feel honored that you're coming on, and I really admire you for what you're doing. There are so many people in society, the average citizens who are either too afraid to make these kinds of moves, or we have people in society that are insecure and feel that they are going to be looked down upon doing these kinds of things. I remember one time saying there was a lawyer and he was in a substance abuse facility. And I remember saying that he would make a better president than any of the presidents that were running at that time. Because this man, he was well-educated, he stumbled, and he brought himself out of that situation. So I want to welcome you once again, Andy, and I will let you take it from here. Thank you so much for giving us the honor of having you on.
Well, I thank you for allowing me the honor to get on the show. And one thing I realize is that, Ms. Leona, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing today without you, your generation, and all of the work that the elders, those that are here with us in the physical form as well as the spiritual form has done. So I really want to thank you first and say I'm honored that I even am able to be on your show. A few little housekeeping items in the bio, just so we know, the Illinois DOC, the DOC stands for the Department of Corrections. So I'm going to change that in the bio. And then last Sunday, I met with one of the advisors, you know, to me, she really just came on, and we've decided to leave that new Democratic Republican Party and then come with a We Are the People Party, because I think there's such a negative stigma, and she brought it to my attention when you hear the word Democrats and Republicans. And so since our campaign is about people's matter, the people's rights, which are inalienable rights, which were given to us by nature's God and the Creator. That's what our campaign is about, is about people. And so we changed the party to We Are the People Party. And part of that is we're looking to, recruit or bring at least 300 people across the states onto this movement with me, because there's 468 seats that is up for election in 2024. And if 300 of us all decided we were going to run on a party ticket that's about the people, for the people, because we are the people, and our message was really to abolish modern-day slavery, because we the people are fed up. And when we talk about the prosecutorial judicial misconduct, the modern-day policing, which is modern-day slave patrol, slave catchers, the IRS with the unfair taxation and taxing we the people who are sovereign. We don't work for the government. The government works for we the people. We have to stop talking about the problem and be the solution. So that's where we're stepping in saying, listen, what if 300 of us, you know, ran on this ticket about abolishing modern day slavery in all forms? Come January 2025, we will be 2/3 Congress. It wouldn't take all this money that everybody's saying they're raising, because we will be raising awareness and we will be teaching each other about how the government has been infringing upon our rights. So I just wanted to clear those things up, but just to share it, like, I am always willing to learn, because I don't know it everything, and I don't want to know everything. I want to be connected to people like Miss Leona or Daphne, who shared this information with me. There's a guy that's in a Michigan prison that's been locked up for 37 years, and I spoke with him today, and now he becomes another advisor, because I haven't been locked up 37 years. I've been locked up accumulation of 2.5 years, and so that means that we have to have those with sometimes more life experience than we have, and to look to them for advice, for counsel, and that's just a little bit about where we're at today.
I want to ask you, Andy, and I hope you don't mind me calling you Andy. It's much easier than Mr. at this point in time, because it's complicated. But I wanted to ask you if you can let the audience know, what are some of the primary issues that you would be focusing on if you were elected, and what would be some of the things that you would expect to happen?
So I prefer to say I'm an applicant for the position of president, because really the people are hiring me to represent them. So I just want to change the narrative on that, to let people know whenever we're applying for a position in an office, it's a job that has a job description that lays out what those what that job entails, which is in the Constitution, the organic Constitution, that shares what that job description is for the one that's applying for the position of president. And some of the solutions we're providing is we need to have the government stop infringing upon our rights. That's a solution. And that solution does not require me to be hired to do that. What's required is I start teaching people how to get a remedy whenever the government infringes upon your right. And that's what makes our campaign very unique in this position. Because if we have to wait till 2024 for us to receive our liberation or our freedom, then I don't think I'm the right applicant for this position, because I should already have the experience on what it takes to help the people get free, to help the people be set free, to inform the people that long time ago in the books of Exodus, when Moses told Pharaoh to let my people go, that was meant to be today. And so the solution is, let's bring forth the DOJ to do the job what they were created for. Back in the 1800s, when the Department of Justice, as history has recorded, it was created, it was to protect the rights of the people, primarily the Negroes and their descendants, the newly freed Negroes and their descendants. We can see today that the DOJ in some areas is infringing upon those descendants' rights. So I want to take what the DOJ has done positively under the current administration. Gitika, Vanita Gupta, has through not just her, but through that administration, has filed some claims against some of the states for voting rights violations. And when Vanita Gupta was at the DOJ under the Obama administration, they brought a claim against the city of Baltimore for a violation of the Safe Street Acts and things like that. That's the type of things that we can do. And once I'm hired for this position, is to bring forth those things historically that work. And the campaign is so much focused on giving the power back to the people, you know? So we looking to say, Andy, we need you to lead us. And what I'm saying is I prefer to represent the people and let them know how to get a remedy whenever your rights have been infringed. So I want to clear the slate out and say, look, we the people have always had the power, and we've been electing or hiring or appointing people that's not holding themselves or their parties or the other people. When we talk about judicial and prosecutorial misconduct, we haven't been holding them accountable. In a case that I have, I sued the landlord for a fair housing violation, and I went to trial, and the administrative hearing officer, and I say that because a lot of times we think they're judges, but they're, when you're ruling on legislation, that's administrative work. That's not really law. So this man cross-examined the witness during trial after I objected. He cross-examined, then said foundation is laid. At the end of the trial, I moved for a direct verdict saying, you know what, they don't have standing. So at least on this issue, they came in and claimed they were somebody, but they didn't prove that that's what they were. They didn't have standing, so I moved for a direct verdict. He denied the direct verdict. 2 weeks later, he issued an order and told them what to do to fix their case. That's a violation of due process. That's not a fair trial. So then I filed a claim against this guy in federal court, and the judicial officer, the judge in federal court, said this guy had immunity. And the way she articulated he had immunity was, did he have on a robe? If he had on a robe, he was in his official capacity and he has immunity. What? Like, how does that even work? These, the judicial and prosecutorial misconduct does not have immunity when you violate your oath, because you have a job that the people appointed you to. And whenever you violate that oath, there's an accountability to it. And that's what I'm bringing into this election, into this campaign, is accountability for all.
That is awesome. And I wanted to ask, now, what would you say? A lot of people are probably going to be looking at the fact, and it's a fact too, that you're going to be advocating for mass incarceration and the low income. There are going to be people in members of society that are going to be saying, well, what about us? What about me? You know, we're not in that category, but we need help in other ways. We want to see division stopped. We want to see unity. We want to see the economy getting back to normal. There's a lot of questions they're going to be asking. And also, I know that in this country there are issues of racism and vengeance and all of these things. So what would you say to the primary population of people, regardless of age or gender or race, what would you say as far as your representation to these people in the United States of America as a whole?
So I would say the reason why we switched it to we are the People Party, because one of the roles of a president is to represent all people. So there's unfair taxation at the top. There's unfair taxation at the bottom. There is infringement of rights at the top. There's infringement of rights at the bottom. There's infringement of rights in the middle. Most importantly, though, I want to share with the people that we are the ones that have the power to make the change. When we look at the Declaration of Independence, the very first thing says, you know, we the people. When we go to the scriptures, I feel like it's in 1 Corinthians, but it says, if my people who are called by my name would turn from their wicked ways. Both of those are saying that the people have the power to make the change. So it's so important that we as a people stop asking other people to change and let us change with ourselves. We got to change because the change starts within us. There's an accountability because you can't go around hurting people and their property. So we have to deal with, you know, infractions that are against people and their property and damaging that type of stuff. But there's a lot of things happening that we are calling crimes that are not crimes. They're legislation, which is modern day slavery, that is infringing upon the people's rights. So what we coming in at this administration is to abolish and repeal the Controlled Substance Act, the Habitual Offender Act, this draconian drug laws, all of that is victimless crimes, which is nothing no different than the black codes, the slave codes, the Jim Crow. It just keeps evolving because you have a group of people that are passing legislation that's infringing upon we the people's rights. And when we look at, say, well, Andy, what do you feel about the racism? Well, my stepmother is German. We label her as being white, but her nationality is German. My wife is Puerto Rican. I grew up in a whole diverse community. If I can say I can get past of all the hate that I've been taught and unlearn those lies, I think we can represent that. So you have a first lady who was Puerto Rican from, you know, her birth. She wasn't born there, but her nationality, ethnicity comes from Puerto Rico, so there's a culture there. And, you know, we always say, well, we want to see the black and the brown together. I want to see the people together. And that's what we're bringing to this administration, saying, listen, we want people in here with us. That's what we're looking for, because we are the people.
What I'd like to say is, in this country, and I say it all the time, there is no one race anymore. You know, there's so much mixture, multiracial marriages and relationships. And then when I tell people this all the time, DNA, everyone's DNA, as you probably are aware, I'm sure you're aware, all DNA came from the continent of Africa, and the Middle East was one continent before the flood. So DNA, it confirms that we are all from the same continent. And throughout the years, people have migrated to different worlds, different continents, and some above the equator, some below. So this is where the pigmentation changes, and a lot of people don't realize this. You know, this is why I have this radio show, to bring awareness. There are so many people in this world that are just so ignorant of the fact, and I don't mean ignorant in a nasty way, but they're just not educated enough on cultures and on these different things. And I encourage people all the time to start looking and start researching, because we have one of our main problems in this country and around the world is there a lack of culture awareness. Even our government, the presidents, they go to war with all of these other countries without really knowing about their cultures, what they're about. But I wanted to also ask you what your thoughts are on all this money that's going over to Ukraine. With our country in the condition it's in right now, what are your thoughts on that?
We are always engaged in foreign aid without taking care of home. Now, I'm not saying we can't give foreign aid, but when you go back to, for those that are aware of it, when Reagan was the president, and we would see the homelessness right around the corner from Washington. You know, like, how does that happen? How can you send aid foreign But we have this issue of houselessness. We have an issue of poverty currently right here domestically. So I think we got to pull back and start investing domestically to free that group of people. And then these people, once free, can come together and teach, not take care of. I'm saying, like, you got to teach a man to fish, is teach others how to utilize their natural ability. Because running, being in this position of president means I do have to work with other foreign affairs. And what we got to do is stop giving aid to foreign affairs without us taking care of our own. And once we're straight, then we're able to help other people and other foreign get straight.
Thank you, because I know that NATO consists of more than one country. It consists of more than the United States. And I noticed that since all of this money's been going over to Ukraine from the United States of America, these other countries have not been doing as much, the countries in NATO. So I feel as though we're giving too much, and they're seeing this, and they're backing away from a lot of it. And I also believe that Ukraine is expecting too much at times from this country. But these are some of the issues that are right now are pressing because of the way it has actually weakened the United States of America financially in so many ways. One of the other issues that we have going on is the economy. What are your thoughts on how we can rectify or try to resolve the issue of inflation in this country?
So inflation means somebody's raising the prices. The chickens didn't go on strike, or, you know, it's things that people are doing. And as a social entrepreneur, that is somebody that creates businesses to eradicate poverty. Like, we're going to create, you know, food deserts, or not create food deserts, but, you know, bring back farming. And if we're familiar with the model of Black Wall Street, that's something that has to be resurrected. But we're saying that as a model, but every community can have that. And what happened through Black Wall Street is the dollar circulated, you know, 15 times. You know, that's what I've read through history in that community. So they were self-sustaining. Now we have individuals opening up businesses in, you know, certain communities, taking that money back out of that community, giving it to their community. And we need to bring economic empowerment, economic development into our own communities through the model of being social enterprises. And Homeboy Industries is an example of a social enterprise with Father Greg Boyle that has one of the biggest reentry and gang reduction organizations in the country, I hear. But I say that because they create embroidering, solar panels. They got Homeboy Industries baking. So that's self-sustaining. And that's one of the ways to get our economy back, because we're going into these impoverished areas and providing hope, providing light. You know, after the last 50 years, you're still seeing neighborhoods that are struggling and for over and over and over and again. And what we have seen, at least how I've seen, when 9/11 came, it was so quick to rebuild the Pentagon. It was so quick to do, you know, let's do what we're doing in New York. And I'm not saying that shouldn't have happened. But what I'm saying is, why do we always have that money so quick to give to that? But then the one that's been in poverty for the last 50 years, you know, their neighborhoods being destroyed, becoming ghost towns, and there's no, you know, infrastructure or assistance there. That has to change. So it takes somebody who has been content with being successful, content with being in the poverty level, and still keeping the relationship on both sides with the people. Because I can talk in a room with billionaires, and I can talk with the man that is houseless, you know, standing on the corner asking for help without judging them. Because I've met them and said, listen, you know, I had a divorce, you know, my wife left me, and, you know, my toes got cut off, and they lose hope. Stop acting like they're out there because they choose to be. Yes, it's easy to say pick yourself up, but sometimes that spirit of depression gets so strong onto you And that's your self-medication because we can't afford, you know, the therapist, or we can't afford these things. So then the people start self-medicating and they can afford that. So then it becomes, you know, it becomes normalized for them. And we as a people are very judgmental without walking in somebody else's shoes. And that is where I feel like I'm bringing that experience into this election, saying I'm walking in their shoes. There's a time I got to be a mediator. I got to take those policies that were designed to the opportunity zones that were passed under the Trump administration. I got to put that out before the billionaires. And then what I got to do is take that concept and then bring it over here into the urban areas and say, listen, we got to do urban, you know, renewal out here, but we can use this billionaire, their money, giving them a tax break to rebuild this community. And then we teaching them through education. And now we have a union, a nation that respects their neighbor, because we see all of us are being able to live, as I say, the kingdom on earth, or the happily ever after. It's doable, because at some point when we go back to the Aboriginal way of living where the natives were here, before they were conquered, they had a restorative justice model in place. Everybody looked out for each other. If you killed the buffalo, you didn't waste parts of the buffalo. You used every part of that buffalo. And we need to learn from those Aboriginal, the Native Indigenous ways, because we have not been taking that model. That part of history has been watered down, or photo images have been switched around, and so much has been changed. But now through technology and the access to libraries for those that go, we can find out what that history was, and we can bring that back. You know, I'm not saying we're going back to a native way of life, but we can implement and establish some of those ways of living so we can stop with this wastefulness, because there's more than enough on this earth for everybody to be, you know, successful, whatever that looks like. But sometimes we feel like, well, if you're getting this over there, that's taken away from me. And that's not the attitude. You should be able to get, you know, what you need to survive, and I should be able to get what I need to survive without us competing with each other.
You know, that makes so much sense. And when I was growing up, that's the way it was. We had farms, you know, the neighbors all shared what they had. Some had chickens and some had ducks and some had goats and some had pigs. And it was all shared. But you mentioned some of these things, unfortunately, with the library. Technology today doesn't permit people or allow people to take the time to go to the library. Everybody is focused on their phones and the computers and the internet, and it's sad because it's taking away from real communication. How would you look at something like this when it comes to lack of communication between people? I always like to talk with people personally, because I can see the body language, I can hear what they're saying, I can see their facial expressions. In society today, the technology has taken away from all of that. And you can write something or message somebody something, and they can take it the wrong way because they don't actually see or know whether you're joking or whether you're serious, whatever the case may be. But you mentioned Ronald Reagan, and years ago, they used to have what was called the CETA program, Job Partnership. I don't know if you remember that, but Reagan took that away. But it was very successful. I believe it was John F. Kennedy that brought that in. But it was where people in the streets, or people that dropped out of high school or dropped out of school, low income or whatever, they had an opportunity to get jobs through job partnership, where part of it was funded by the businesses and part by the government. I'd like to see something like that brought back, because it gave these young people an opportunity to get off the streets and to get them their lives together by getting involved in these types of programs. What kinds of programs would you establish or have established for these dropouts? At one time, they even were able to go into the military if they were high school dropouts, and a lot of them came out of the military as men with titles. You know, they actually did something with their lives. They took that away as well for the young people. So if they drop out of school now, they don't have that opportunity, and they're hanging out in the streets. What are your thoughts on that?
So I feel like it's called Rose High Schools. I might have to look back into my research, but in Arizona they have a vocational high school.
Exactly.
And a lot of times, again, I completed the eighth grade, I flunked the ninth grade, and after that I was like, forget school. My dad had his own construction company, so I kind of like grew up with the trades, and while I was suspended from school, I'd have to go work with my dad until I didn't, because I just was like the prodigal son, was going to do what he wanted to do. But when you bring back that job, the vocational training in high school, and I think they got three different shifts, the children go to school maybe 3 to 5 hours a day, maybe. I can't remember, but you're giving them what they need to succeed. And Mike Rowe, if anybody knows him about Dirty Jobs, he's like, we're one generation from the trades, meaning there's no plumbers no more, there's no electricians no more. Because of this technology, we all think we need to go that way. And so when we start bringing back these vocational training in high school, you're not going to see so many kids being dropped out, because that's something they need. And you mentioned it earlier about the farms. Farming is a big thing, because now we're able to grow our own food. And we're seeing this genetically grown watermelon or something I saw on Instagram. What the heck is going on? We don't know what the genetic meat, we don't know what's happening. So what we have to do is be responsible for that. And that goes back to earlier what I was saying about resurrecting the model of Black Wall Street. Now you got, you know, the local grocery store that has the butcher shop. Now you have the farmer that's bringing in the vegetables and tomatoes, kind of like those farmers market, you know. And if we begin to network across the states like we should be doing, then when this season is in over here, we're shipping that over here while they're growing their, you know, bulls and cows and chickens and all that. Then they're shipping that over there, and it's kind of balanced out like a bartering system, you know. And that's what we can do as a people. And these solutions that I'm sharing does not require me to be hired to be the president to do that. That's why I keep going back. We the people have the power. We can choose who to work with. We can choose how to barter with one another if we choose to do that. We have the power to do it, is what I'm saying. We do.
You know, you mentioned the vocational schools, and this is what I feel so bad about. First of all, I traveled 11 third world countries, and I didn't go to just the tourist attractions. I went into the bush. I went into the villages, and I've seen how they live. But one of the things I have to say is vocational training is the best training that could possibly be, especially in the United States right now, because they're taking away from these students what they should never take away, and that's hands-on. Everything is taught in universities today, in schools. They're taught by paper. They're taught by words. Vocational schools years ago, where I came from, they used to build one house a year. I remember going to all the Barnstable school system, and I put in to have a home built by the Barnstable Vocational School in 1972. These kids came in with their teachers, the carpenters, the electricians. I had my own foundation put in. I hired somebody to do that. But the electricians, the carpenters, they came in, all of them. They built this house. And this house at the time cost $11,000 to build. No labor, just the materials. Throughout the years, I added on. But it was a three-bedroom house that was built. And unfortunately, my house was the last house that they built. My house was supposed to be on the waiting list for 7 years. But because I just asked for a regular house, not a mansion, they chose to build my house, and it was a three-bedroom, beautiful home. Throughout the years, I added two more bedrooms in the basement and a kitchenette. I started in a bathroom when a tragedy hit me. So what happened is I ended up ultimately selling my home, and I sold it for $79,900. The following year, the people that bought my house sold it for $250,000. This home was built by the Barnstable Vocational Schools. It was the last home built, and this house was built so solid, and if I had waited and didn't want to leave because of this tragedy that happened, I could have gotten that much, if not more, had I sold the house in my time and not right away. But this is what vocational school was all about, teaching these kids how to be excellent carpenters, excellent masons, excellent electricians. And they stopped it. And I don't know if they do it anymore in any of the places, but they also had vocational schools that were teaching these kids how to go out and work on automobiles and work in so many other areas. What are your thoughts on that? And I know as president of the United States, that would probably not be your concern, but what would you think about some of these type of programs that have fallen?
So I would think that we got to bring them back. And right now in the Department of Corrections, Michigan, they have a prison bill program that they call Vocational Village. And they're doing this right now. And there's more all across the states. We just don't know about them. There's like a lack of communication. There's a right here in Illinois where I'm at, there's a Lawndale Christian community. They have a whole block where they got health care, a church there, vision. They're doing this. Like, they're actually doing it. These are models that can be duplicated. What's always missing is the blueprint. We don't have the blueprint. You got to go to college to learn this. And if you're going to college to learn this, then you don't have the time to come back and do it, because once you're out of college, then you got to pay the money back. So what we have to do is start coming back to this vocational training, the certificate programs. And the reason why I say vocational, because vocational is hands-on. You know, my wife, she's a baker. You know, she went to a culinary class, got a certificate. She ran her own business. That's what we can do as the people. We can say, hey, Cliff, you got this model. Show me how to do this over here, a certificate program. There's a lady I saw on Instagram today. She's got this reentry and teaching people, women reentry houses. She's teaching people how to do this through a certificate program. You don't got to go to college to learn this model. And she's showing people how to do that. And there's a guy, Glenn Martin, and he said, often people that are closest to the problem are closest to the solution, but furthest away from the resources. A lot of us ordinary people have the solution. We don't have access to the resources.
Exactly.
And sometimes because we don't believe they do. And earlier you alluded to, you know, the courage that it takes for me to, you know, step into this position. And the courage comes from, who else can represent me? Who?
The highest power.
Say what, Miss Leona?
I said the highest power.
Yeah.
Our creator.
Yes. And so we have to do this, people. If there's any message I could ever say is, we the people have the power. We the people have to do this. And when we the people come together and say, I know how to do this, let me teach you because you want to do it, boom, now we got it. And that goes back to why I feel so confident time around, is because I learned from the first time me running, and I realized it's got to be a we the people campaign. You know, it's got to be us. And if we can just grab 300 people across these states and we teach them what it is to have that vocational school, teach them what it is, what the 16th Amendment really said about taxes, you know, what this modern day slavery, prison industrial complex, how all this money is being made of billions of dollars and we're not seeing it. Why do you invest in a prison but not into a school?
I agree. You know, I want to say real quickly, too, on the prison issues. I recently listened to a video. Apparently, some of these legislative members are looking at the prison reform, but they're also looking at abolishing life without parole sentencing and allowing people who have been in prison for 25 years or more to have an opportunity to go up for parole. The problem that I see here is they're advocating for this, which I totally agree with. However, the Department of Corrections has a habit of targeting people and preventing certain ones from doing anything to show that they can be productive. Some people have been in prison for years trying to get into programs so that when they go before the parole board, they can show that they have worked hard to become more productive. No one seems to be addressing that issue. What are your thoughts on that? And unfortunately, when I listened to this video today, it was done by one of the legislative members whose brother at one time, she lost a brother to murder, but she also is totally against life and life without parole sentencing. She is an advocate for prison reform. And again, she is fighting for prison reform and abolishing life and life without parole, but no one seems to be advocating for these individuals who are fighting so hard to do something while they are incarcerated, and they're being denied. They're being provoked and denied, and they're not able to progress. So what happens to them?
So Norway has a model for their people that are, you know, detained, and it's maxed out pretty much at 15 years. So, you know, it's really about restorative justice. And North Dakota has modeled that. But Maine right now, Maine is very, it's very progressive. There's a guy named Ryan. He set up the Zoom call for me. You know, he has his own Zoom, his own laptop, had a background. And we did a whole 30, 40-minute Zoom. And he's, you know, currently locked up. So when I go back to what the purpose of prisons were, was a correctional facility, we got to go back there. There we got to go back to. But as I alluded earlier, there's a lot of people in prison for legislative acts that deprives them of their rights under a color of law. Primarily what I would say is a victimless crime. When we deal with this war on drugs, which really was a war on people, as through the Nixon administration, one of the guys, I think, said it. Like it was, you know, specifically targeted to the hippies and the people of color. That's what that war on drug was really about. And it wasn't about, you know, public safety as they allude to. So when we start getting rid of that, you know, repealing the Controlled Substance Act and things like that, we will have less people enslaved, you know. Now we're really dealing with those that are a threat to themselves or a threat to society, meaning they can harm themselves or harm, you know, people in society. Now we can focus on giving the real treatment that is needed. When you see what's going on in Alabama right now and many of these other plantations that they call prisons, it's set up where the guards, the ratio to those that are enslaved is such a numerous number, so they got to rule by force. Well, that's the same thing that was happening on the plantation. So when you get rid of these people that are in here that don't belong there, and we actually provide the services that are healing. You know, there's a lot of post-traumatic slave syndrome. A lady, Dr. Joy DeGroy, that speaks about this generational trauma. And so when we get to the healing of that, and when I say the healing of the generational trauma, I'm saying for all people, listen, it's criminal to lock somebody up for something that's not a crime. And these people that swear these oaths to the Constitution, they are violating their oath and they are creating victims. Like we coming in here for instance, a traffic stop that I've been fighting for 4 years, there's no victim. Nobody was injured. Well, that violates Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution. In order to have standing, you got to have an injury. There's no injury and no traffic stop. Somebody driving under the influence. Yes, he's a harm and a threat to society. But before we were locking all these people up, we would take the keys and make them spend the night, you know, in the jail or something to sober up or have somebody come get them. Now it's become, you know, a business. Somebody that's driving under the influence, that's a disease. That somebody has a sickness there or they're hurting and they're trying to self-medicate. Let's help them out. Get them to a center. Let's do something more than just saying, I'm going to lock you up. Now I'm going to push you into poverty even more. Because if you don't pay these fees, then you're going to go to jail. What crazy, sick society does that? We have to change that. We do. We do.
You know, you're right. And I bring this up a lot as well. We have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses and addictions. And unfortunately, not everyone is addicted to drugs because they want to be getting high all the time and having a good time. A lot of them become addicted because they're overly medicated by the pharmaceutical divisions, the doctors. And then you have a lot of them, we have a large population in this country incarcerated who were victimized as children, traumatized. You know, a lot of them were traumatized as children, went so far, they were resilient until something major happened. So we have an epidemic, and I started a petition about a year ago to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities for the mentally ill and also for the substance abusers. And I feel long-term residential treatment facilities with independent providers is a lot better than what goes on in the prisons, because they have these contracted providers who are doing more harm than good to these people that are incarcerated. But that's another issue, you know, in the prison that needs to be looked at. I wanted to ask you your thoughts. Now, as far as the homeless go, I have a problem with these homeless shelters that provide a roof over their heads at nighttime, put them out in the daytime, and they don't have anything from morning until evening to do with these people, their housing, with the homeless shelters. My personal feelings is that they should bring in volunteer professionals to work with these people during the day, because when they put them out in the streets in the morning, by the time they go back to the shelter at 5 o'clock in the evening, some of them have already started using again. So mm-hmm. I feel there should be something round the clock for them. What are your thoughts on that?
So there's a sister out here in Illinois, Inglewood Barbie, and she does not use the word homeless. She say they're the friends and they're houseless. So I'm going to take on that and say, you know what, these are the friends and they're houseless. What I believe is, again, the church should be leading the forefront with the social justice movement. And so when we look at there's not enough shelters for these houseless people, the churches are closed Monday through Friday, a lot of them. I'm not saying all of them, but, you know, where I live at, I see them closed Monday through Friday. If somebody is, if the shelter in the community has been gracious enough to have them overnight, then they need to be able to come to these churches that are pretty much in every neighborhood and get the necessary healing, education, you know, the social part of it throughout the day so then they can get on their feet. Because when we don't educate them, and again, I'm not saying that it should just be the government doing it. I'm saying we, the people, should be doing it. And that includes the churches. That includes the businesses. You alluded earlier, and I think it was with the Job Corps program, where the businesses and the government came together. And I think that's where we need to be at. Because right now, what we're seeing is the government needs to fix it. No, the government doesn't need to fix it. Because what is the government? People. We, the people, have a problem. Which that goes back to the restorative justice part. That means if somebody in the community is hurting, the whole community is hurting. And we as a community, we as a people are going to come together to bring this solution. And that is irrelevant of what the 2024 election results happen. We have to do this because we're at the point, we've been at the point of no return. And if we don't do it now, then when? If not us, then who? Because we are the people. So we got to say, listen, we have a houseless problem. How do we fix that houseless problem? We come to these communities. We're going to build these homes out of shipping containers. Well, whatever we got to do, we're going to do this. And we're going to do it together as a community. Because before we were being charged $300,000, $400,000 to build a home, people were coming together grabbing sticks and bricks and pouring the concrete together in the community, and here goes a home. We can go back to that. We can go back to that. We can.
You mentioned the churches, and I have to say one thing about churches, and I myself feel the same way as many people in society do. The churches have not really fulfilled their obligation as far as going in and really working with people in the streets. I know that there are so many television stations full of people preaching to the choir and getting money, so much. And I keep thinking about Jesus the Christ when he came into this world. And he didn't have anything, and he went around preaching to thousands of people. So I don't have much faith anymore in a lot of these churches. And another thing I feel that needs to be looked at, and I want your thoughts on this, is oversight. Oversight in the prisons, oversight in the nonprofit organizations out there claiming to help. There's a lot of them that are helping, but yet there's a lot of them that are receiving money, taking phone calls, making a letter, writing a letter or making a call, and using that as representing clients. So what are your thoughts on oversight when it comes to a lot of this, the reform that needs to take place, the DOC around the country, these organizations that claim, even ACLU, you know, they have on their website that they help people in need in the prisons. And I have not met anybody that has gotten help on an individual basis or even a lot of people that were trying to do class actions. So oversight to me is very important. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I'd like to know.
So real quick, I want to answer that. And when from that, can we close? Because for some reason I thought this was an hour and I got a 5:30 that I got to be on. So
that's okay. I'd love to have you come back on though, so we can talk more on some of these issues.
Yes, definitely. I thought we would come on every Tuesday this month. I had booked it in my calendar. But what I would say is this. One of the reasons why Andy has stepped up to be an applicant for president, because I've learned a lot from the ACLU, the Southern Poverty Law Center, the NAACP. And I believe now it's left up to us to do this. And so when we go back to the vocational training, you don't got to go to law school if you can comprehend what a claim is. If I can teach you through our through now, we can show you and teach you how to do this, which is vocational training. Before they had colleges, they had vocational training. Before you had a lot of stuff that's going on, there was in the family business, we could do that. And when we talk about the churches, they're not doing it. Well, my generation is a change, and so we become the church. You know, I'm looking at a building right now to open up a temple because of, you know, my faith as an Israelite. I feel like this is our duty to do this now and stop looking at somebody to do something for what we ought to do for ourselves. I believe I know we're in a time that we've had access to so much resources, we just got to step up to the plate. It's like batter up now. We the people got to step up to the plate. We the people got to be the team now. We the people have to say, we know what needs to be done because we have experience through lived experience. I go back to what I said about you, Miss Leona. The things that you have done in your life, you got to share that with my generation. And I'm saying I'm showing up for class. Yes, I'm applying for the position of president, but I have to honor those elders that have been before me, that have been here longer than me, that have experienced stuff that I don't even want to think about experience, but I want to share that story. And I need that guidance. So when you look at our cabinet, you look at our circle of counsel, it's those that have been there, done that, that can share. Now, don't go down that road. I went down that road and it came to a dead end. I need to hear that because I will definitely go down roads that I don't know because I'm unfamiliar with them. But if you know and if other people know, they can say, no, young brother, take this route. We've been there. And that's how we have a nation. We have a society that looks like us. Because it's done by us, because it is us.
I want to thank you so much, Andy Williams Jr., for coming on. Andy Williams Jr., running for the presidential campaign. He is of the average citizens, trying to make a big difference. Audience, I want you to come on. We will have him on every Tuesday for the entire month of September. And Andy, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out to come on the show. I really appreciate you and I admire everything you're doing. You mentioned learning a lot from the elders. And one of the things that I have found in society today is even in legislative members, we have a lot to offer them to help them to grow. But the thing is, we live in a country, as many people I interview from the other countries have stated so many times, we live in a country that's so they're so much for greed, power, fame. They don't want to have somebody that they feel is less than them to tell them what to do. And that's why it's good that someone like yourself is coming on, because if you do become the president of the United States, people would be able to relate to you and you would be able to relate to them. And I myself have been told in past years by my superiors that whatever it was that I was doing, it was working, not to stop. Years ago, I used to work with the clients when I worked as a social worker for the Department of Social Services. I could relate to them because I went through everything, a lot of them. I went through a lot of what they went through. I understood. I sympathized with them, and I would try to help them. I never had a child removed from the home and placed in a foster home where they were later abused or violated or even killed. So sometimes people have to realize those that are taking the position or requesting the position or fighting for a position like this, if they have never been there, done it, then they're not going to be successful in what they do. We have people in politics who came from money. They never had to work hard like many others of you in the society. So I want everyone to listen when we have Andy Williams Jr. speaking out. He is someone that has been there. He knows exactly what the people need. And I am so honored to have you on again, Andy. Thank you so much for coming on. And I know that you're pretty busy with everything that you're doing right now. And I thank you for giving us this opportunity. And I look forward to next week, same time, 5:30 Eastern Daylight Time. And Andy, once again, thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
If you have any last words you'd like to say before we close, please do.
Listen, we the people have the power because we are the people. It's talked about in the Constitution. It's talked about in the scriptures. And we have a duty to take care of this nation as the people. So I ask y'all, it's not just me running. It's all of us. Join me in this campaign.
And again, Andy's websites right now are hoodcandidate. I had a blank moment like Mitch McConnell. I was going to say on that too, they said that it wasn't a stroke or anything like that. One of the things they haven't considered is the fact that maybe this man at his age is coming down with dementia or Alzheimer's. They haven't even spoken about that. They're coming up with all these other things. This is why we have a government that's not really on top of things. But again, it's www.hoodcandidate.com for Andy Williams Jr. And it's www.andywilliamsjrjr.com. That's andywilliamsjr.com. Again, thank you so much, Andy, and I look forward to next week. Thank you so much. And we are going to be ending this episode now.
Okay.